Greetings, and welcome to the Pieris Pharmaceuticals Incorporated First Quarter 2017 Earnings and Corporate Update Conference Call. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Lance Thibault, Acting Chief Financial Officer. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us here at Pieris Pharmaceuticals for our Q1 2017 earnings and corporate update. We announced our financial results yesterday evening, March 10th, 2017, after the market closed, for the first quarter and 3 months ended March 31, 2017. You can access our press release on our investor relations page of our website at www.pieris.com, P-I-E-R-I-S. In a moment, our Chief Executive, Stephen Yoder, will get into the business update, but first, the following statement. In compliance with the safe harbor provisions under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995, I'd like to caution that comments made during this conference call by management may contain forward-looking statements that involve risks and uncertainties regarding the operations and future results of operations of Pieris, including statements related to the timing and progress of our clinical and preclinical trials. Actual results or events may differ materially from results or events discussed in the forward-looking statements. Factors that might cause such differences include those set forth from time to time in the company's filings with the SEC, including without limitation, the company's Forms 10-K, 10-Q, and 8-K. Furthermore, the content of this conference call contains time-sensitive information that is accurate only as of the date of this live broadcast, March 11th, 2017. Pieris undertakes no obligation to revise or update any statements to reflect events or circumstances after the date of this conference call. With that, now for Steve for a business update before I get into a brief summary of the financial results for the first quarter for you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Lance, and thanks to everyone today for joining us for our 2017 first quarter earnings call. Pieris Pharmaceuticals is a clinical stage immunology-focused organization pioneering the development of next-generation targeted protein therapeutics called Anticalins, which share many desirable properties with antibody therapies, yet have unique advantages that enable them to be used in ways that antibodies cannot. At Pieris, we are exploiting these advantages to develop proprietary drug candidates across a range of diseases in our two primary therapeutic focus areas of immuno-oncology and respiratory diseases, while having also developed an innovative therapeutic candidate for anemia. Our portfolio of innovative drug candidates continues to be developed using our proprietary Anticalin drug discovery platform, which is protected by an extensive suite of issued and pending patents, and which has been validated through a series of strategic partnerships that also serve as a source of non-dilutive capital to fund our operations. The first quarter of 2017 was highly productive, marked by a transformative global strategic co-development and co-commercialization partnership in January in the immuno-oncology arena with France's second-largest pharmaceutical company, Servier, which was followed a month later by a Japan-focused partnership with ASKA Pharmaceutical on Pieris' most advanced program, PRS-080, a drug candidate addressing a specific type of anemia. These very different partnerships demonstrate our commitment to becoming an immunology-focused, fully integrated biotech company, as the Servier alliance provides for fully retained commercial rights in the United States for several immuno-oncology programs, while the ASKA partnership demonstrates our commitment to carefully divesting assets outside of the immunology space. As part of our commitment to focusing on both immuno-oncology multispecifics and inhaled Anticalin-based proteins to address respiratory diseases locally, we were thrilled to have more recently entered into a global strategic co-development and co-commercialization alliance to address respiratory diseases with AstraZeneca just last week. We expect these anchor partnerships with Servier and AstraZeneca will not only enable but also accelerate the transformation of Pieris Pharmaceuticals into a fully integrated drug development organization with clearly defined paths to commercialization in immuno-oncology and respiratory disease. Altogether, the success-based milestones from our existing partnerships, including those with Roche, Daiichi Sankyo, and Sanofi could total more than $4.5 billion U.S. dollars, plus royalties on sales by our partners. Moreover, both the Servier and AstraZeneca alliances provide opportunities for direct sales by Pieris in the United States. Also importantly, the three partnerships consummated in 2017 so far have yielded approximately $80 million U.S. dollars in upfront payments, extending our financial runway through a series of critical value inflection points while enabling materially increased investment in our proprietary pipeline. Based not only on the corporate milestones achieved to date, but also the additional corporate milestones we intend to achieve later this year, we continue to believe that 2017 will be the most value-creating year in the history of our company. More information on our partnership with AstraZeneca is contained within the conference call replay dated May 3rd and can be found on our website. Next, I'd like to provide you with an update on the advances within our product portfolio, both fully proprietary and under co-development with our disease focus anchor partnerships, Servier and AstraZeneca, as well as to provide you with more details about these partnerships and with ASCA for anemia. Turning first to immuno-oncology, our primary therapeutic focus is on unique immuno-oncology multispecifics. Our lead program, PRS-343, is a bispecific fusion protein made up of two parts, a monoclonal antibody that targets a clinically validated protein on some tumor cell surfaces called HER2, and an anticalin that targets the T-cell co-stimulatory receptor CD137, also known as 4-1BB, and which is expressed on the surface of T-cells within the tumor microenvironment. The advantage of this bispecific approach is that we can activate T-cells within the tumor microenvironment and direct their activity to HER2-positive tumor cells for effective tumor killing without unwanted T-cell activation in healthy tissues, which we believe could lead to systemic toxicity seen with conventional antibodies. Last month, we presented data informing the design of a first-in-patient clinical trial for PRS-343 in a poster session at the annual meeting for the American Association of Cancer Research, AACR. These data showed that PRS-343 elicited robust T-cell activation when engaging HER2 on the surface of cell lines resistant to Herceptin therapy. Also, PRS-343 was well tolerated and led to no significant findings in IND-enabling preclinical safety and non-human primate toxicology studies. These data reinforce and expand upon the in vivo preclinical data previously presented at the CRI Cancer Immunotherapy Conference last December, which showed that the treatment of animals bearing HER2-positive tumors with PRS-343 resulted in a dose-dependent increase in the frequency of tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes, as well as a strong inhibition of tumor growth, but having a reduced systemic toxicity and a higher efficacy in comparison to the conventional anti-4-1BB antibodies. PRS-343 remains on track to enter a phase 1 multi-ascending dose study involving HER2-positive solid tumors representing unmet medical needs such as breast, gastrointestinal, and bladder cancers in the first half of 2017. Pieris, as a reminder, owns full global commercialization rights for PRS-343. Beyond this, in immuno-oncology, in January, as I mentioned, Pieris announced this transformative global immuno-oncology partnership with Servier to jointly pursue up to 8 bispecific therapeutic programs, including our proprietary dual checkpoint inhibitor, PRS-332. PRS-332 is a novel bispecific comprised of an anti-PD-1 antibody genetically linked to an anticalin protein targeting an undisclosed checkpoint target. Under the financial terms of this alliance, Pieris received an upfront payment of approximately $31 million U.S. dollars and stands to receive up to $1.8 billion in success-based payments in addition to up to double-digit royalties from the potential sales of products by Servier. Pieris and Servier will jointly develop PRS-332 and split commercial rights geographically, with Pieris retaining all commercial rights in the United States and Servier having commercial rights in the rest of the world. Pieris has the option at a predefined time point to to co-develop and retain commercial rights in the United States for up to three collaboration programs beyond PRS 332. Finally, our first immuno-oncology partnership, a collaboration with Roche, announced in December 2015, continues to advance. Under that collaboration, Pieris is developing anti-Caelin proteins specific for different epitopes on an undisclosed immuno-oncology immune checkpoint target, and Roche will be responsible for the development and worldwide marketing of any resulting product. This collaboration leverages our capability to address a target in multiple ways through anti-Caelin-based drug candidates in different multi-specific formats, and it has a total milestone potential of approximately $400 million U.S. dollars, as well as royalties up to low double digits. Turning to our second therapeutic focal area, which is the deployment of novel inhaled anti-Caelin-based therapies for respiratory disease, including asthma, we want to highlight here that our lead respiratory program, PRS-060, is an anti-Caelin that's differentiated from standard of care and emerging standard of care on several important levels, which includes its inhaled mode of delivery and its mode of action involving the inhibition of the inflammatory effects of both of the key cytokines in the T2 pathway, IL-4 and IL-13, that activate a clinically validated receptor on the surface of respiratory cells called IL-4 receptor alpha. PRS-060 represents a first-in-class inhaled treatment for uncontrolled asthma that is based on IL-4 receptor alpha blockade. There are several clinically and commercially important advantages of an inhaled therapy for asthma over subcutaneously administered antibody approaches, and these include the potentially fewer systemic side effects, increased patient convenience and compliance, given the inhaled route of administration, a significantly lower dose and a lower cost of goods. PRS-060 currently is in IND-enabling studies, and we expect to initiate a first-in-man clinical trial in the second half of 2017. We believe PRS-060 targets a very large potential commercial opportunity of 20 million patients globally. Last week's strategic alliance with AstraZeneca, a global leader in respiratory disease, leverages the expertise of AstraZeneca in the area of complex formulations and inhaler devices for respiratory diseases, as well as their global commercial capabilities. Under the terms of that agreement, Pieris will receive $57.5 million in upfront and near-term milestone payments and up to approximately $2.1 billion U.S. dollars in total success-based payments across up to five programs, including PRS-060, as well as royalties from future sales. Pieris is responsible for advancing PRS-060 through a phase one study in healthy volunteers, which will be funded by AstraZeneca. Following the completion of this first proof of concept phase 2A study trial in asthma patients, which would also be funded by AstraZeneca, Pieris may then exercise an option to co-develop this program in the United States. And doing so would afford Pieris increased royalties up to the high teens or a gross margin share of future sales depending on the level of co-development investment. If Pieris chooses not to exercise its co-development option, then Pieris will be eligible to receive royalties from future sales. Pieris separately has an option to co-commercialize PRS-060 in the United States. And beyond this program, the alliance includes four as yet undisclosed novel programs. Pieris will be responsible for the initial discovery of novel anti-Caelin candidates for these programs, after which AstraZeneca will take the lead on continued development. Pieris has an option to co-develop two of these programs at a predefined preclinical stage and would also have the option to co-commercialize these programs in the United States. AstraZeneca will be responsible for development and worldwide commercialization of any programs for which Pieris does not exercise its option to co-develop and co-commercialize. And under this condition, Pieris would be eligible for royalties from future sales. So beyond these two areas, I would now like to provide an update regarding our partnered and proprietary programs outside of immuno-oncology and respiratory disease. Under a collaboration initiated in 2010 and then expanded in 2013, Sanofi is developing a tetraspecific fusion protein comprising four distinct anti-Caelin proteins, each targeting one of four different families of siderophores from Pseudomonas aeruginosa, collectively engaging 20 targets. This drug candidate continues to move forward and is currently in the IND enabling stage. The next update I'd like to provide is for our collaboration with Daiichi Sankyo, who partnered with Pieris to research, develop, and commercialize two Anticalin therapeutic programs beginning in 2011. The first therapeutic program is an Anticalin protein targeting PCSK9, also known as DS9001A. Daiichi Sankyo completed a phase 1 single ascending dose study in healthy subjects for DS9001A in 2016. The results of this phase 1 study showed a favorable safety profile and also demonstrated that DS9001A is a potent inhibitor of PCSK9, as the drug candidate materially decreased LDL-C levels in the phase 1 study healthy subjects at levels similar to those observed with the marketed anti-PCSK9 monoclonal antibody. With the evolving regulatory and commercial challenges for this class of drugs, however, Daiichi Sankyo provided notice to Pieris this past Monday, May 8, 2017, of its decision to terminate this program for strategic and commercial reasons. In connection with the termination of the development of DS9001A, Pieris has full reversion rights to the program. As part of the reversion process, Pieris will diligently review all clinical data and will thereafter consider its strategic options. With our dedication to the immunology-related areas of immuno-oncology and respiratory diseases, Pieris does not plan to advance DS9001A as part of its proprietary pipeline. We will, however, diligently assess whether an out-licensing campaign for this asset is warranted. I'd like to emphasize that Daiichi Sankyo's termination is only with respect to DS9001A, and that the collaboration agreement remains in effect for the second Anticalin protein against an undisclosed target. Pieris previously reported Daiichi Sankyo's decision to initiate GLP tox studies for that program in October of 2016, which continues its path to the clinic. While we recognize the challenges in the PCSK9 market generally, we look forward to continue the advancement of this second therapeutic program and our continued collaboration with Daiichi Sankyo. Further, I wish to point out that the milestone potential for the now terminated PCSK9 program is but a very small percentage of the overall milestone potential from the now more than one dozen partner programs in our pipeline. Finally, I'd like to discuss our most advanced program, PRS-080, which is a highly potent inhibitor of hepcidin, a key negative regulator of iron metabolism. Hepcidin is upregulated in states of chronic inflammation, such as chronic kidney disease, effectively trapping iron in the body's iron storage cells, and this, in turn, causes what is called functional iron deficient anemia. PRS-080 represents a potential first-in-class therapeutic for this disease. As you know, in 2015, we completed and reported on a phase 1 single ascending dose study conducted in healthy volunteers, which demonstrated that a single dose of PRS-080 was well tolerated and resulted in a dose-dependent increase in serum iron and transferrin saturation, TSAT. Pieris has completed a phase 1b single ascending dose study in anemic chronic kidney disease patients on hemodialysis and will present these data in June at the European Renal Association and the European Dialysis and Transplant Association Congress in Madrid, Spain. Pieris will next initiate a multi-dose phase 2a study in the same population this month, with a currently anticipated completion of enrollment and dosing of all patients in the second half of this year. As mentioned, in February of this year, we announced that we had granted Asker Pharmaceutical an exclusive option to license the development and commercial rights of PRS-080 in Japan and certain other Asian markets. Under the terms of this option agreement, Pieris received an option payment of $2.75 million, and should Asker exercise its option to develop and commercialize PRS-080 following positive results from the planned phase 2A study, Pieris would be eligible for more than $80 million in combined option exercise fee and milestones stemming from the successful commercialization in the first indication in Japan. Pieris may receive further development milestones for additional indications, as well as in other countries within the ASCA territory, and may receive double-digit royalties on net sales of PRS-080 up to the mid to high teens. We believe that the functional iron deficient anemia in hemodialysis patients represents a substantial medical need in Japan and amounts to a sizable target population of roughly 80,000 patients in Japan. This partnership with ASCA and option payment have enabled Pieris to invest in drug manufacturing facilities and future drug supply for PRS-080, which we believe will allow ASCA to more seamlessly advance PRS-080 into the next phase of development and will facilitate future partnerships for PRS-080 in the U.S. and the EU. Finally, I'm pleased to report that during the last quarter, we also continued to advance our other partnerships. And in particular, the immuno-oncology with Roche, as mentioned, continues to advance, and the other programs beyond the DS Daiichi Sankyo program are advancing on plan. This concludes my prepared remarks, and I would now like to hand back over to Lance to guide you through our financial results for the first quarter of 2017.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. As to Pieris' financial results for the first quarter of 2017, let me start with revenue, of which under GAAP we recognized $1.3 million for the quarter ended March 31, 2017. This compares to $1.2 million of revenue for the first quarter of 2016. Approximately $1 million of that revenue in the first quarter of this year was attributable to research funding in our collaboration with Roche, and the remainder representing the beginnings of our collaboration with Servier. In terms of research and development expenses, they amounted to $5.4 million in the quarter ended March 31, 2017, which compares to $3.7 million in the first quarter of 2016. The $1.7 million increase was primarily attributable to a $0.9 million increase in preclinical development, CMC, and clinical costs for PRS-343 as we carry out IND-enabling studies, and a half a million net increase in CMC and other costs associated with PRS-060 as we continued our IND-enabling studies. In G&A, expenses for the quarter ended March 31, 2017, were $4 million compared to $2 million for the quarter, first quarter of 2016. The $2 million increase in G&A expenses was primarily due to $0.8 million in higher personnel-related costs, including stock compensation, another $0.9 million increase for professional fees, principally on account of success-based fees on announced deals, and a $0.3 million increase in travel, recruiting, and other administrative costs. Altogether, the net loss for the quarter ended March 31, 2017, was $8 million, or 19 cents per share, which compares to a net loss of $4.2 million, or 10 cents per share, for the first quarter in 2016. Turning to the balance sheet, total cash and cash equivalents as of March 31, 2017, totaled $55.2 million. And was a $25.8 million net increase in the quarter from $29.4 million we had in the bank as of year-end December 31, 2016. The increase in cash was driven primarily by the 30 million euro upfront payment received from Servier and the option payment received from ASCA, offset principally by approximately 8.8 million in operating cash operating expenses during the quarter. And with that quick financial report, I'll turn the call back to Steve for any closing remarks.
All right. Thanks again, Lance. As you all can see, we began this year with three successive strategic partnerships, two of which are global and transformative for Pieris within our two key focus areas of immuno-oncology and respiratory diseases. We also advanced our proprietary programs and remain on track to take our wholly owned lead IO asset, PRS-343, into first-in-human trials during the current quarter, while advancing as sponsor our partnered lead respiratory asset, PRS-060, into first-in-human trials later in 2017, which will be funded by AstraZeneca. Altogether, our partnerships have generated approximately $80 million in cash flow year-to-date and could bring us more than $4.5 billion in milestone payment potential, in addition to royalties off of future product sales, not to mention several opportunities for direct commercial sales in the U.S. So with a strong balance sheet, we have the ability to make robust investments into our proprietary and co-developed programs while providing sufficient cash runway to reach several key value inflection points and we reiterate our belief that 2017 has the potential to be the most value-creating year in the history of our company. Thank you for joining us today and for your continued interest and support. We would now like to open the call to any questions.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Once again, that is star 1 to register your questions at this time. Our first question is coming from Mike King of JMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking the question, and congrats on the progress. Apologies in advance for any background noise or poor connection. Steve, just wanted to see if you could help us think through the target patient population for 343. A lot of optionality for patients with HER2-positive breast cancer. As we think about the role that 343 may play, where do you think appropriate patient population lies along the treatment spectrum?
Sure, Mike. Thanks for the question. Well, I think one of the benefits of having a targeted 4-1BB therapy like PRS-343 is that already the universe is focused on HER2-positive tumors. Now, we have reason to believe from the AACR poster data presentation that we presented in April that our drug is likely to be able to drive 4-1BB cross-linking at HER2 levels lower than what's classically regarded as Herceptin test positive. We are going to start playing to win by focusing on what are classically regarded as HER2-positive tumors. We will run our ascending escalation phase and then our expansion phases in what would be the most prevalent HER2-positive tumors, including metastatic breast, muscle-invasive bladder, gastric cancer, gastroesophageal cancer. These are going to be the focal areas. We will also look at other HER2-positive tumors. From looking at the literature, we believe that not only are there a significant subset of patients who ultimately stop or fail to respond to the HER2 therapies like Herceptin, like Kadcyla, but those patients also have an immune component. And we know what's happening in bladder where PD-1 antibodies are effective in a subpopulation, showing that bladder cancer, for example, is an immunological cancer. So it's ultimately going to be data-driven. And it ultimately will not be limited to those three types of cancers, but that's a good place to start. And the strategic benefits now of having these strategic partnerships in place with the robust inflows of non-dilutive capital will allow us to more robustly follow these data. But we believe those opportunities alone provide significant value for this program. But stay tuned as the data evolve, and we'll follow them more robustly than we otherwise could have.
Okay, but let me maybe press you a little bit more on it. Where in your perception is the unmet need at the moment, given the current treatment options in HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer?
Well, with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer, a significant amount of patients after several years of remission come back, and they really don't have a viable option. There really is no standard of care. And we believe that in those patients, our drug, on top of emerging standard of care, including PD-1 antibodies, we'll be able to probe whether or not the synergistic combination of HER2 engagement, HER2 receptor blockade, plus bringing in T cells specific for tumor neoantigens at the tumor bed, will bring about a very differentiated mode of action. That's why we are probing this area. And that's why we do clinical trials, to see if these data are likely to read out positively. But we believe that there is a compelling rationale to move into patients because of their levels of HER2, the fact that there is no standard of care today, and the fact that we believe that our drug will be able to augment and proliferate T cells in ways that the current checkpoint inhibitors cannot.
Thanks for taking the question.
Sure. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from Hartaj Singh of Oppenheimer & Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Just got a couple of questions. One is, Steve, can you just remind us again on the PRS-080 Phase 1B design, what you know, do you expect, what learnings do you expect from the data which you're going to present, and then how does that influence sort of the Phase 2 that you're going to be initiating shortly? And I just got a quick housekeeping question after that. Thank you.
Sure. So this is, again, this was a single ascending dose in dialysis-dependent anemic patients, you know, who presented largely with a functional iron deficient phenotype. So they would have typically having elevated levels of hepcidin and higher levels of ferritin and moderate to lower levels of TSAT. And as we showed in the healthy subjects study, that our drug would, in a dose and time course dependent manner, elevate or mobilize serum iron and also increase TSAT. We hope to be able to demonstrate that same level of robust iron mobilization and TSAT increase in the patients who start with much higher levels of hepcidin than healthy subjects. So the design itself involved, it was three doses, six patients per cohort received drug, two of placebo, so it was a total of 24 patients. And what we're doing now with the unblinding of the data coming imminent is to look at our drug's ability to mobilize the iron, what the hepcidin feedback might be, to help then inform the right dose to pursue in the multi-dose study, which, as a reminder, will involve five administrations of drug over a four-week period given once weekly to assess the ability of our drug to drive hemoglobin levels beyond simple iron mobilization.
Great, fantastic. Really appreciate that that color and that insight. And then just, you know, I noticed that in the press release you had indicated you've gotten sort of $80 million in cash flow in 2017 through your those are the upfronts, right? And then just, I don't know, I might have missed this on the commentary from Lance, but just any thoughts on how you're going to recognize the AstraZeneca upfront?
You know, first question, yes, those are the upfronts generated in the business development deals, you know, of which on AstraZeneca, under the terms I expect will be in here in the second quarter. Revenue recognition, that's a tougher one. We're just getting our arms around it. I think similar to our collaboration with Servier, that the upfront monies in connection or in the collaboration with AstraZeneca will be recognized under GAAP over the period of our obligation, which you know is an extended period of time under you know number under the various deliverables identified for accounting purposes in the contract. So that's kind of a non-answer, but tune back in at the end of the second quarter. We'll have a good grip on that, but it'll be over a period of time, like for certain.
No, sounds good, Lance. Thanks again for the color. Just one last question. You know, your operating expenditures sort of stayed flat to slightly up fourth quarter to the first quarter. Is that sort of a good way to think about it? You know, OPEX going flat to up, you know, through the end of the year, or just any thoughts there would just in terms of would help us with modeling? Thank you.
Yeah, I think flat to up with the emphasis on up as we, you know, to an extent anyway, as we, you know, get going with Servier and AstraZeneca.
Got it. Again, appreciate all the answers. Thank you.
Thanks, Hartosh.
Once again, that is star one to register any questions at this time. Our next question is coming from, Boris Peaker of Cowan & Company. Please go ahead.
Great. I'd also want to add my congratulations on the recent progress, certainly in the partnerships. And my
My first question is on
343. I'm just curious, is that an asset that at some point you would also like to partner out maybe? And if so, what stage of development do you think that would make sense? Or are you really committed to fully retaining this for you know a significant period of time?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Boris. And I think part of our corporate strategy involves taking PRS-343 as far along as we can without partnering it. And again, what the partnerships announced in the last couple of months allow us to do is to more robustly follow that data, as we mentioned, and ultimately gives us, I think, the staying power to take this to proof of concept on our own more globally, and then ultimately take it to market in the United States as part of our corporate strategy of marketing and selling transformative therapeutics in the U.S. Unlike the Astra, program that was partnered, PRS-060, which had more complex formulation things we have to deal with, as well as locking in the commercial device early in the game to accelerate the time to market, this program, PRS-343, is at least a lot less complex from a delivery perspective, and we believe following the data out there already, following the discussions with our very esteemed advisory network, we have a line of sight to proof of concept. We have the capital to get us there, and we will then be data-driven and prioritize indications, or at least an indication, to take to the market in the U.S. on our own. So precisely the time to think of partnering that thoughtfully outside of the United States, that's something we're going to work through. It's something that we're currently not prioritizing.
Great. And my other question is on the Roche partnership. I'm just curious to know, when would the targets be disclosed, at least some initial targets?
I mean, it's, at the end of the day, it's up to Roche, as it's their target, and they came to us in the end of 2015 with a specific idea. I want to emphasize it's just a single target, but the mandate is to discover and characterize a panel of unique anticalins on different epitopes on that target, with the ability to think about a multi-paratopic approach to more robustly engage that target, or functionally engage that target, as well as to be able to join genetically one or more of those anticalins with potentially other antibodies or biologics in the Roche pipeline. So it's just a target, but it does show our ability to address several epitopes with one target for a unique multi-paratopic mode of action. And I would not expect, honestly, I would not expect the disclosure of that target in 2017, maybe after an anticipated project handover towards the end of this year. There could be a change in thinking, but it's up to Roche at the end of the day.
Great. Thank you very much for taking the questions, and again, congratulations on the progress.
Thanks again.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from Mike King of JMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking the follow-up, Steve. I just wonder if on 9001A, I'm not sure I heard you fully because I'm on a train and got a bad connection, but I know you said you're not going to develop it yourselves. Just as far as seeking a partnership is concerned, can you talk about sort of what properties, or attributes the molecule may have that could make it competitive in the current treatment landscape that might, entice someone into taking that off your hands?
Sure, and thanks for the follow-up, because this is a new update for the company. I would say three things to consider when we're talking about DS9001A. The first is that we just received notice of this on Monday, and we need to go through the data thoroughly. We started to look through it, but we want to have a more thorough review before we formulate any opinions. And again, I would also want to caution anyone against conflating what is, I think, a well-behaved anticalin that appears to be well-tolerated, appears to have robustly engaged its target, and mechanistically in a healthy patient population, I think behaved as one would have expected, analogous to how our PRS-080 molecule mobilized iron potently in healthy subjects in the healthy volunteer trial. This is certainly not a read-through of anything to the anticalin drug class, which I know you're not implying in your question. I just want to make sure that's abundantly clear to our investors. I think the contract provides a great deal of flexibility in how we can go about partnering that program. Potentially, the reduction of the milestone burden otherwise that would have been borne by Daiichi Sankyo could make this otherwise more attractive to someone. The mode of action for the intended mode of action that Daiichi was pursuing with the albumod technology linked to this was a long-acting half-life. We know other programs in this space, other companies in this space are likewise trying to prioritize that type of mode of action. So we have to assess how competitive this program would be as those programs have moved into this space after the initiation of this program with Daiichi several years ago. The lower cost of goods, as a reminder, this is made in bacterial cells, so a lower cost of goods could potentially be an advantage. But I would like to reserve further comment at this time until we've had a more thorough review of the data. I would just end by saying I think we've demonstrated our ability to partner and partner well just this last 5 months alone. So if this program has an opportunity through partnership, I think we'll be able to find it. So stay tuned.
Thanks for taking the follow-up.
Sure
thank
thing.
You. I'm showing no further questions in queue at this time.
Okay. Well, again, thanks, everyone, for your attention today and for your continued support of our company. We look forward to keeping you updated on the continued progress, which will include presentations of a variety of upcoming R&D conferences. Thank you for joining the call, and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. Today's conference is concluded. You may disconnect your lines at this time and have a wonderful day.